What's up? Welcome back to our live Tuesday night live stream here, episode number 31. This is Bitcoin Center, brought to you by Bite Federal. My name is Cedric Youngelman.
I'm Paul Tarantino.
Man, it's been another week, huh?
Yeah, dude.
All right. Another week. Yeah, how was your week?
It was good, busy. I mean, it's just nonstop stuff going on.
Yeah. I want to read this tweet thread here. This is what I thought was interesting. Is Nicole Shanahan the most successful sexual entrepreneur in the world? She was engaged to be married to a guy in finance. This was answered by Simon Dixon, by the way. That's why I'm reading this. Yeah. Shanahan then met and began an affair with Google co-founder Sergey Brin, one of the richest men in the world, a month before her wedding at her own bachelorette party. Her husband ends the marriage after finding out. She then marries Brin. This causes all kinds of problems at Google and causes Brin to neglect his work and personal responsibilities. Larry Page, his co-founder, disapproves of the relationship, and this causes much turmoil at the company. Did you know this?
No.
Her marriage with Brin falls apart when she sleeps with Elon Musk.
Shut up.
One of only a handful of men in the world richer than her husband. Musk publicly begs Brin for forgiveness at a party. Brin is so hurt, he sells $336 million in Tesla stock. And his friends stop driving Teslas in solidarity. Brin gives Shanahan $1 billion in the divorce, I guess, according to this guy, to go away. Shanahan uses her money to run for vice president and spread anti-vax conspiracy theories. The RFK movement helps Trump reclaim the White House. Just because of who she was able to sleep with, this woman caused major turmoil at Google, destroyed the friendship of two of the richest men in the world, and plausibly determined the outcome of a presidential election. Just an amazing story, and goes to show how the MAGA movement is like a dream team of apex grifters, etc. You have a reality TV star taking over a major political party, the king of pseudoscience, the biggest influence is able to give the brain rotted masses what they want.
Wow.
And the woman who became a billionaire and influential political operative just by sleeping away to the top. That's a little rough. But this is Simon Dixon responds. This is what the dollar is backed by. It's a proof of weapons network. Sex is now a weapon that impacts share prices more than earnings per share. This is what the late stage of an empire's debt cycle looks like. Anything to pump up stocks at the expense of the dollar.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. Wow. Nuance to sort of the.
That's wild. She's decentralizing the tech.
Well, right now she's out sort of speaking for, I guess, like tech. Wives or, you know,
yeah,
wives
of billionaires, yeah,
sort
yeah.
of a lot of philanthropy. She seems super smart. And she was really influential in, I think, RFK's run.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I had no idea. I mean,
I didn't know the backstory.
I've like generally agreed with everything she has said, but I had no idea that she all this was behind all that.
No, I had no idea either.
That's wild.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the worst thing in the world if two tech billionaires aren't buddies.
No, I mean, that's kind of common. Yeah. I mean, how many rock stars in a band stay friends over 40 years?
Rock stars in a band, baby.
All right, well, let's get into the show. This is by Bitcoin this Center, brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself.
ATMs, wallets.
Point of sale. Use Bitcoin as money.
Do it. Let's be real, right? Praising Telegram for launching a Bitcoin wallet. I've always felt like Bukele.
Bitcoin, this digital currency that's out there that people say, oh, it might be the next big thing. What do you think?
I think it's rat poison.
Bitcoin. You never heard of them a few weeks ago? Now everybody's talking about them, but is it a currency?
I don't know. Or is it more like a stock? Or is it a tulip bulb?
Or is
whatever
it
the date that?
Stupid.
To me, it smells like Ponzi scheme and the greater fool theory, right?
If you do like 5 minutes of freaking research.
Well, guys, thanks for coming to my set talk.
Yes.
Don't buy Bitcoin.
Oh, man, I didn't get that wrong. All right.
Bitcoin's recent rally.
Do you agree? Is crypto finally dead? Go to the next one.
Matter of fact, they're kind of in the Ethernet. What are they?
No. Some rumors that it's a Japanese guy, but I say no, that he's a fake name. It was a pseudonym.
You're literally putting real money onto a system that we don't even know who created it.
It will come to a bad ending.
Is this the most exciting bull run ever?
Not for me. No, it's not.
Welcome to Bitcoin Center, the fast-paced show where the debate is the story.
Dude, I just realized you're gonna have to change the intro to the flying from the flying RV to like the chicken coop swamp landing shed in the backyard. Like,
all right, well, Francis, get on it. We're gonna update the intro there. All right, let's get into it. The top story of the week: the world's largest corporate Bitcoin holder is now worth less than its Bitcoin. Strategy holds 650,000 Bitcoin, worth $55.9 billion today. Its market cap is only $45 billion in change. Does this officially signal the end of the Bitcoin treasury company playbook?
No.
And why not? Or what are you thinking? Like, MNAV goes below one on the biggest pioneer in the space.
I think you're seeing momentum pile on. You're seeing people trying to really understand these companies. There's definitely going to be some train wrecks. There's definitely going to be consolidation. There's definitely going to be changes to business models, but it's going to sort itself out. And at the end of the day, Bitcoin will go to all-time highs again, and the FOMO will start again, and MNAVs will expand. Will they go to 5-7 times? Probably not, but I don't think
it's going to stay here. You think we get
above two? I don't think it's going to stay here. I think there's people that are probably looking at this right now saying, wait a minute, I can buy this at a discount.
What about the potential delisting from indexes?
Yeah, that's interesting. And
do you think this is a concerted effort by the likes of JP Morgan?
Yes, I do. I do think it's on purpose.
Yeah,
I think they're going to be rolling out similar credit products. And they would like nothing more than to take some of that market away from Saylor because he's been so successful with it. So, yeah, that's just, it's a war. It's, Bitcoin is rattling the cages.
All right. Well, yesterday, so here's Peter Schiff chiming in. Today is the beginning of the end of MSTR. Saylor was forced to sell stock, not to buy Bitcoin, but to buy U.S. dollars merely to fund MSTR's interest and dividend obligations. Mm-hmm. The stock is broken. The business model is a fraud. And Saylor is the biggest con man on Wall Street. Those are
rough words.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But what about the deeper question?
I think there's been pressure from him to sell Bitcoin if he needs to, and now he's saying he would do that. There's been pressure for him to have a cash reserve so that he could pay these dividends, and now he's getting that. So like he's figuring this thing out, but no one's going to be happy. No one's going to be happy. But at the end of the day, smart investors buy deep value.
What do you think of them raising cash and sitting on cash? I mean, we went from $500 million.
I think he my only criticism of that is why weren't you raising cash when Bitcoin was
higher
and buying dips, right?
Right.
So, maybe that model will change over time, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they thought that they could corner so much of the market they could drive Bitcoin up forever. But obviously they can't. There's been a significant wall of selling over this last year, and it's hurt their performance. So, but I don't think it changes the long-term vision for what he's building. I think his vision is going to evolve. I think you put him under the pressure of an attack, and I think he'd get pretty creative.
Yeah, he seems to be.
He's a survivor.
Bobbing and weaving. I think they're going to bounce back strong. This is Pierre Richard chimed in. Strategy's new fiat reserve for dividend interest payments checks a box for institutional credit due diligence and rating agencies, near-term coverage of fixed obligations. Long-term, this will likely attract more capital for the preferreds, more business Bitcoin accumulation, and increasing amplification for the common at a lower cost of capital. This would outweigh the opportunity cost of not holding marginally more Bitcoin.
Right.
So it looks like the strategy is evolving. I think we're all learning here.
Yep.
The last one I want to bring up is Dan Hillary chimed in here. And I thought this was interesting. Let me bring this one up. So holding MSTR is a call option on them lending out their Bitcoin and creating exponential Bitcoin yield into the future. The reason MNAV is not able to be sustainably high above 2x is because Bitcoin yield based on current tactics is naturally diminishing. If instead Strategy's Bitcoin stack yielded 4% annually via some form of lending, this would be an exponential Bitcoin yield. Mm-hmm. In a world of PE ratios, there could be a high multiple in this exponential yield and could be a significant catalyst for sustained higher MNAVs. How do you get the MNAV higher? People think we are close. This is Fang Li talking. How do you get the MNAV higher? People think we are a closed-ended fund, but we're an operating company. We should trade at some premium that represents our ability to grow our treasury reserves over time. Over the course of the next year, big real banks are going to offer services. We would consider lending with large banks. Have had a lot of productive conversations with large U.S. banks and are excited to partner with them.
Yeah.
And that was in response to Fang Li, CEO of Strategy, going on Bloomberg TV today and just referring to the $1.4 billion in U.S. dollar reserves. So, you know, it's an interesting evolving strategy.
You know, that would coincide with, like, of course, J.P. Morgan would want to attack Strategy if they're going to get into that business.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
And a lot of other, I think, like-minded allies of theirs.
Yep.
So let's jump into the next one here.
Let's do it. All right. Topic number two, miners pivot to AI infrastructure. Major miners are now partnering with AI firms. Microsoft's $9.7 billion deal with Iris Energy, Amazon's $5.5 billion deal with Cypher to repurpose high-power mining facilities for AI GPUs. Could this pose a risk to Bitcoin security?
No, I don't think this poses a risk to. I think this enhances Bitcoin's position in the infrastructure of the country and sort of in power. I want to read more from this article. The future of power integrated AI infrastructure. The convergence of Bitcoin mining and AI infrastructure is reshaping the global energy and tech landscape. By 2026, Bitcoin miners could control over 20 gigawatts of AI ready power capacity, with companies like IREN and CleanSpark leading the charge. This shift is not merely about repurposing hardware. It's about redefining how digital infrastructure interacts with energy systems. So and I think this is also in response to, you know, sort of hash rate going out of control at all-time highs, Bitcoin's price plummeting, the commitments from these AI companies for this power usage, and that's mm-hmm. all essentially these mm-hmm. companies are doing, selling power, mm-hmm. is astronomical. I'm a little suspect on whether they're going to deliver the actual yeah. revenue from all these contracts, but I think this makes perfect yeah. sense, and I think this integrates AI and Bitcoin a lot, or as it should. And I'm hopeful that Bitcoin will be the thing that kind of bends AI towards truth.
I mean, I think it's good for mm-hmm. energy production
yeah.
at large, right. which is going to be good for Bitcoin mining. It's going to be good for the United States in general.
Yeah.
So
I think it's going to lead towards nuclear.
Yeah, I agree. All right.
Let's move on to the next one here. All right. Well, let's talk about Elon some more. Musk's
some fundamental Bitcoin currencies, if you will, that are physics based. So energy is the true currency. This is why I said Bitcoin is based on energy. You can't legislate energy. You can't just, you know, pass a law and suddenly have a lot of energy. It's very difficult to generate energy, especially to harness energy in a useful way to do useful work. So I think that probably we won't have money, and probably we'll just have energy, you know, power generation as the de facto currency.
Yeah. That was a little confounding when he says we're probably not going to have money.
I've actually heard this kind of theory before from others that eventually all money would go away and it would just be energy. But it's hard
what
to
does that mean?
Like, how do you trade?
Would you trade Bitcoin?
If you're going to trade an energy token, then you're going to be trading Bitcoin.
Right. So there's still tokens. There's just
So when
he says there's not going to be money, at first I'm thinking that he's conflating that with fiat. And saying currencies are going to go away.
Maybe.
And then he's saying something like Bitcoin's an energy-backed token when that's just, i.e., money.
Yeah.
So it's still, I'm still not blown away by anything he says.
But when he changes his mind, he's just going to apologize.
Is that a new clip? I'm not positive that's a new clip.
No, it's old.
That's old. Okay. Yeah, that's why it's not making, it's just going around.
No, it's pretty new, guys.
That's pretty new.
You sure?
But how come it's making no splash like anytime he's ever mentioned either things like Doge or Bitcoin before?
Right.
I mean, I don't think it's making as big a noise as it used to, but I don't know. It's interesting. Okay, he still seems like a word salad to me.
Well, he's a complicated guy, right? I mean, he goes all over the place. He's sure. like he'll change his tune all the time. Like next week, he could be talking about fucking Ripple, for all we know.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, at I think a lot of the times, like, when he was talking about Doge, that was on the back of all the repercussions he got from moving to Bitcoin during the green energy attack on Bitcoin, mm-hmm. or, you know, that it was going to burn the world. And it's like he has a lot of masters to please in his world.
So you're excusing his flip-flopping.
I don't know what I'm saying. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying, like, I think that he plays those games.
He speaks to different audiences with different things.
Yeah, exactly. Fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next one here.
All right, Revolut's Lightning integration. Revolut announced Lightning Network support via LightSpark for its millions of users. Can this fintech giant's move finally ignite consumer Bitcoin payments?
No, I don't think this is a big deal at all. I don't think it's going to like ignite Lightning or consumer payments. I think this could be some sort of big development, and this is not guaranteed to actually happen. But I think this is a real partnership from what I looked into.
Yeah.
These are big companies in terms of Revolut. They have about 55 million users across the world.
Look, I think this is good. I think this is great. I mean, this is like any time a big fintech platform integrates Lightning, or in this case, LightSpark.
Yeah,
which Spark is cool.
I think LightSpark is legit.
It's actually moving legit Bitcoin. Yep. It's not.
And I think it's battle tested over at Coinbase, I believe.
I don't know about that.
I think Coinbase is implemented, from what I read in this article.
But I don't think this ignites consumer payments. Like, it's not a.
No,
it doesn't flip the switch. And I think the real problem there is that they're dealing with European regulations. They're dealing with MiCA. Or Mika, however they pronounce it.
Yeah, yeah. Which has shaped this company a lot. You know, this company's only been around about 10 years, and they're already a $75 billion privately held company in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they are shaped a lot by the regulatory framework.
Yeah, And that's in flux and in development and trying to, you know, so this isn't going to roll out quickly. But the fact that they're committing to rolling this out and that they're going to make this happen, that's like the Cash App of Europe, right? I mean,
it's like the PayPal of Europe. Yeah. They're competing with these major companies.
Yeah, so that's great.
They announced this deal in May. They touched upon it recently in November. We don't know when it's going to come out. It could be a test case or a trial run here in December, or it could be sometime in Q1. But it would be great to see. I don't think it's a game changer.
Dude, it is a end run to the end zone before the EU kills.
Mm. Well, I also don't think this is not all about Bitcoin. There's a lot.
No, I understand. Yeah,
it's about crypto and stablecoins.
Yes, yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next one here. I think we have a clip from Farida Namarima. The African Bitcoin Conference kicks off the fourth edition in Africa. As Africa's Bitcoin community gathers in Africa, I can't see. December 3rd to 5th, under the leadership of Togo activist Farida Namarima, many attendees are calling it one of the highest signal events on the global Bitcoin calendar. How might this summit shape the narrative around financial sovereignty and decentralized infrastructure across the continent?
Well, I mean, are we going to play a clip? No. Okay. If this summit just reflects what's happening in Africa, then it says a lot about sovereignty and Bitcoin adoption. I just had a conversation last week. It'll be on our Bifederal podcast here coming shortly with Stafford Massey from Africa Bitcoin Corporation, which is the first Bitcoin treasury company that's really developing in Africa. And when you hear the stories he tells about the adoption, the amount of real life commerce that's taking place with sats, it's so exciting. Like, Africa has just said, you know what? Bitcoin volatility is nothing compared to 3% daily inflation. like 20% drop in Bitcoin, we don't care. We're going to use sats. And they come from a culture where, I guess, a very large percentage of their economy, like larger than the cash economy, is like much, much bigger than the so-called banked or legitimate economy. So they come from a culture of banking themselves, where you had somebody in your community that was the human ATM, that was the human bank account, that was your lender. And so they very much have that trust and peer-to-peer system built. And now they have a digital format that goes straight to your phone, and they're adopting it at a massive pace. I mean, it's so exciting. I think what's happening in Africa.
What do you think is going to have a bigger impact on Africa than sort of the storing of value and whatever sats they're able to acquire and keep? Or is it going to be more using Bitcoin as payment rails and not so much the fees that are saved, but connecting Africans with the rest of the world as entrepreneurs?
It's both. It's all the above. But it's starting in this part of the world, right? It's starting as medium of exchange. But that medium exchange, because it's not devaluing, because it's not inflating away to dust, now they have savings. Now they're able to, you know, fund future growth and future projections and grow their businesses, pursue passions, start things that they never fathomed that they could start. So it's starting there with MOE and moving to store value. Mm-hmm. You know, we're obviously in the West, where we have a banking system that works, we have payments and credit cards and everything that works, is starting a store of value and moving to MOE. But it's, I don't know, man, what's happening in Africa when you start hearing these stories is really cool.
Awesome. All right.
Well, I'm stoked.
Hit like and subscribe. This is Bitcoin Center, brought to you by Bite Federal. Go bank yourself. Let's head over to the lightning round.
So this is a cool little battle going on here. Stock exchanges versus crypto tokenization. Global stock exchanges, NYSE, NASDAQ, et cetera, have warned regulators not to let crypto platforms bypass regulatory principles by tokenizing stocks. Is this pushback a savvy defense of investor protection or entrenched finance resisting legitimate blockchain innovation in equities?
I think it's actually legitimate pushback. I mean, if these regulations are needed, I think, you know, I don't see
what's needed. Every tokenized stock has already registered with the SEC, gone through all the proper filings to register their stock on a stock exchange. So they're already legitimate reporting corporations.
So everything just
so now it's just the SEC.
Lift and shift, because if it's just lift and shift, I'm with you then this is just bullshit.
Well, it's lift and shift, and the global stock exchanges are pissed off. They're pissed off because there's other
custodians and there's other players now.
Well, there's no custodian because it's blockchain.
That's what I'm saying. So how
right? This is awesome.
You think this is awesome?
I think this is great.
I think it's inevitable. I don't see how anyone's gonna consumers are gonna be safe in this environment.
You got the SEC, and then you got broker dealers, you've got the
and this is all trust me, bro, though. Like, hey, we have the stocks that we have them a token.
Still, you cannot register a security without going through the SEC.
I was on the assumption this would be like existing securities,
right?
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So they're already all these individuals.
I'm talking about more the custodianship, the sort of like
that all goes away. That's why they're panicking. That's why they're pissed off.
You're saying. Yeah, okay. You think that there's gonna be no sort of rehypothecation or like illegal like just because
if it's a tokenized security and you can take self-custody.
And you think they're going to allow self-custody?
I have no idea.
Of your tokens?
But this is a token that you could... I mean, I have no idea.
That doesn't mean you get to have custody of it just because it's a token.
I don't know what the SEC laws are going to be. I don't know what they're going to approve, right?
Right.
But if they approve pure security tokenization, if they give the green light, because the securities, the actual stocks are already registered with them. They're already meeting all the criteria.
So 500 million MicroStrategy shares have been issued.
Yeah. Okay. And we tokenize some of those and we stick them at Coinbase.
And how do we know we don't have we don't end up with 900 million shares when who's auditing across all the different platforms? If you have some tokenized, some not tokenized.
They would have to take some of their float and they'd have to tokenize it.
Right.
But if you're going to question, if you're going to measure,
how does this not lead to dark pools?
Hold on a second. If you're going to measure the actual number of securities that are out in the world, you much easier to measure those on a blockchain. But
wouldn't they have to all be on the blockchain?
Well, that's what I mean. But all the fraudulent activity is happening off the blockchain. The blockchain is actually the better source of clarity because it can be audited. what's happening at the DTCC, what's happening with
sort of like GameStop, you're saying, and sort of like the short selling.
Yeah, naked short selling, etc. These are all the creation of paper securities that don't really exist. That all happens because it's off-chain. So you move that to tokenization, and of course these guys are going to panic because that's like where they're making a bunch of money, is lending securities that don't exist.
But I still think that we have to make sure that we don't issue more tokens than there are securities and more.
Right. So how would the So that's up to the SEC, right?
Right.
Well,
I think that's where the exchanges are begging them to say,
what I'm saying,
can you
is
take a look at this and make sure they don't go run wild here?
Well, they haven't done, the SEC hasn't done a real great job in the traditional market.
Yeah, no, they're not great at doing their job.
But. So, I mean, you know, I mean,
Weber, I think the legacy players are saying at least when I was working
at Payne Webber in this, the first like major financial crash that I went through, and Dole went through a bankruptcy, and they're like, oh, there's 30% more Dole shares in existence than we knew about.
Right.
So at least if it's tokenized and on a blockchain, we can audit.
Oh, after 9/11, I was in Bank of New York disaster recovery site. We had stacks, I think, from the DTCC and then stacks from like the banks that made the trades. And we were just trying to match by hand piles. I mean, rooms full.
Oh my God.
Of books. And we were just doing it by hand. 30 shares here, 30 shares here. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
To reconcile after 9/11 and all the sort of pausing in the tape. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next
one. It's going to be interesting.
Okay, Cash App's Lightning yield. Block disclosed that its Lightning node operations are earning 9.7%.
Mm-hmm.
If corporate Bitcoin services are yielding high returns, is this a breakthrough sign or one-off from optimized routing that won't last?
No, I think this is really cool. And I mean, yes, does it? It is related to optimized routing. Sure, it is related to the fact that they have giant nodes and they're running huge volume. But there are other companies out there getting high yields as well. Now, what, like, does this last is going to be interesting, right? How much does LightSpark, how much does Spark take over? How much of this move starts to move to liquid? Like, you know, there's different. I guess what I'm saying is I don't think these high of yields last.
Yeah.
But there will be a yield.
Yeah, I agree.
And
will that be considered the risk-free rate?
I mean, I that's what we as Bitcoiners kind of anticipate, that this is where this is going. But I mean, at the very, it's a payment routing network, right? So
in this environment,
does it become a risk-free rate? What do you think
the risk-free rate would be in this environment? Let's say Lightning usage just blossomed.
Yeah.
And there was enough liquidity to like, This is the new risk-free rate. Do you think it would be 7-8%? You think it would down to like 2-3?
I have no idea where it's going to go down, but I know it would go down.
It would go down.
Because that high of a yield, if it's replicatable over time, will be pursued.
But we are in a high interest rate environment.
Yeah, but the interest rate, the SOFR rates, Fed rates have nothing to do with this.
Right.
So.
Well, do you think they would be related at some point? Like, meaning like this would always come in lower or higher at some point? Like, what would be the relationship over a long period of time?
This is a pure volume game. These fees are super low.
Mm.
Like, if I was Visa or MasterCard, I'd be going, oh, shit.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's interesting, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if this, you know, becomes the default, the no-risk rate or the whatever you want to call it. But it is a really interesting business model. Other companies will pursue that, and I think the fees will compress. And then once you know the world wakes up to payments over Lightning, LightSpark, and other L2s, and the benefit and the low cost of that relative to Visa, MasterCard, I think they should be thinking about this.
All right, we'll see. All right, let's move on to the next one here.
All right, this is interesting. The S&P downgraded Tether. The S&P cut Tether's transparency score to 5, which is their weakest, right? They go 1 is the best, 5 is the worst, over lack of reserve disclosure. What do you think?
I think this is part of the sort of the coordinated attack. I mean, this is absurd. I mean, if anything, Tether loaded up on Bitcoin and gold
mm-hmm.
and U.S. Treasuries. So I think this is just sort of more of the battle between the traditional system and Tether.
There's an administration and a treasury that's saying we want stable coins to go global. We want to sell treasuries via stable coins globally. That means that the banks are going, what's our purpose now?
Right.
S&P, you should maybe do something about this.
Yeah, JP Morgan, and step in.
I mean, we've seen this before, right? Where we, like, when they downgrade the US debt, we've seen how off these rating agencies can be, right? Like, it, like, you don't get downgraded until you're at the bottom of the great financial crisis, right? Like, there's, it doesn't take too much time in TradFi to figure out that the rating agencies are a part of the game.
Mm, sure.
So I just kind of chuckle at this.
Yeah, I think it's a nothing burger, but I mean, Tether's trying to fight back. I wonder how much it actually affects their business. I would venture to say at this point, not much, but it's not
Tether helpful. Sells how much of their stablecoins offshore?
Yeah.
Do you think anybody offshore buying Tether cares what the S&P thinks?
No.
No.
Yeah. But I think institutionally, this is not.
This is just like, you know, don't worry, B of A, JP Morgan, you guys are going to be okay. I got your back.
Yeah, I think it's a bunch of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw that in the great financial crisis. All right, let's go through this next one. Bitcoin treasury stocks slump. Mm-hmm. Shares of companies hoarding Bitcoin, you know, for example, MSTR or Marathon have tumbled on the market dip. Is this a healthy de-risking of aggressive balance sheets, or will we start seeing the big fish eating the small fish soon?
Yeah, I do think we're going to see mergers. I think we're going to see acquisitions. But I think this is just the market sorting itself out and finding what's going to work and what's not going to work. Finding out, you know, who's, when the tide goes out, who's got shorts on and who doesn't, right? So I think this is part of the process. Equities markets go through this all the time. Whenever you get a trend, something that really takes off and everybody chases it, you're going to get a consolidation. We're going to see the same thing in AI, right? The AI boom and there's going to be trillions and trillions of dollars of AI transactions. Like, they're not, like, that tide's going to go out on that too. And everyone's going to be like poo-pooing AI. And then 2 years after that, it'll be back.
Right. Yeah.
Right. This is just the nature of markets where people can see the future faster than they can build the future. So yeah, we saw a future, it got extended, it's being sold, and it'll get built again. So yeah, it's a more volatile asset than Bitcoin. Imagine that.
Do you think that Bitcoin treasury companies were sort of diluting causing a bear market this year by, you know, taking $10 for every $1 was bought, or were they the support all year long, propping up the price this year?
That's a good point. How much money that flowed into treasury companies would have instead flowed directly into Bitcoin?
Yeah.
That'd be, I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's a great question. Because you go stick $100,000 in Bitcoin, it's directly impacting the price. You go stick $100,000 in strategy and you're getting a fraction of that Bitcoin.
Yep.
So that's a great point.
Especially with the smaller companies, if you're buying at 5, 10, 15, 20 MNAV.
Right.
And I mean, I think a lot of Bitcoiners got burned that way.
Yeah, Metaplanet burned a ton of capital that could have gone straight into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
All right. Moving on.
CoinShares pulls shitcoin ETFs. CoinShares abruptly canceled its planned XRP, Sol, and Litecoin ETFs on NASDAQ. Does this retreat signal a pivot?
No, they're not going to Bitcoin only. They're still going to come out with some wild stuff and some interesting hybrids, some Bitcoin and sort of like traditional assets merged together, probably in ETFs. And they got a whole slew of things coming for next year.
Yeah,
I think this was just a reaction to a lack of demand.
Yeah, and they thought altcoin season was coming and they were going to milk it and capitalize on it. And it was here for like a month and then evaporated. So they're going to pull it. They'll reintroduce it if they see an opportunity.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of risk there for them.
Shitcoin are going to shitcoin.
There we go. All right. So Venezuela crypto payments. Venezuela's retail sector predicts crypto will account for 10% of grocery purchases by 2026 amid hyperinflation. What does this mean for the future of Bitcoin in Venezuela?
I think that's a low estimate. Especially if the administration
I think this is all stable coins.
Them out. Yeah, sure. It's all stable. I mean, the vast majority is stable coins.
Yeah.
But I think if our administration has anything to say about it, it'll probably be more like 50% of the grocery bill.
It just seems like we're seeding Latin America in stable coins.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the new trading corridor for the United States. You're going to reshore to the Americas, not just America.
Right.
And there you're going to get their people to adopt the currency, which is happening, whether the government's like it or not. You're either going to be like the district manager of the US dollar stablecoin in XYZ Central South America, or you're going to be up for a battle like we're seeing in Venezuela.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Latin America here.
This is similar, but Latin America digital asset boom. Chain Analysis found Latin America saw nearly 1.5 trillion in crypto volume July 22 through July 25. June 2025, sorry. Is Latin America quietly becoming Bitcoin's proving ground for parallel financial infrastructure?
I think this is still all about stable coins, remittances, and dealing with inflation.
I mean, what's interesting, right? Brazil, 90% of their crypto volume
is stablecoin.
So it's selling.
And over that period of time,
is selling their fiat to get a USDT.
And over that period of time, it was out of the 1.5 trillion was 300 billion by Brazil. And 80-90% of that was stablecoins.
Yeah.
And only 3.5 billion was El Salvador.
Right. So if you're going to be. I mean, if this is going to be the new trading corridor, the America corridor, right? We're buying basic materials and whatever the
Argentina,
yeah, from Argentina,
the peso deal,
yeah, we're doing that. We've got El Salvador housing our
tether
criminals that we're exporting. Sure. We're trying to get Venezuela to clean up their act. So it looks to me like the administration is attacking the deep state. Through attacking cartels. This is my tinfoil hat. If you're sitting there in the world saying like, how's the deep state getting all their money? And there's a big chunk of it that's against America. Well, what are they doing? They're bringing in illegal immigrants. They're bringing in drugs. They're killing people with fentanyl, on and on and on. Let's take out the cartel, which is generating the revenue for the deep state. And by clearing that away, we can legitimize trade with the rest of, right? We're shifting from let's oppress Latin America to let's build up Latin America and clean it up so that we can do business together. Mm. Because we can no longer do business with China and, you know, Europe is dying. So what are we going to do, right?
Yeah.
This seems to be the move.
Man, that's interesting. Yeah. And Tether is based in El Salvador.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, we'll see where that goes.
Which was our first U.S. dollar general manager.
Right. I agree. All right. RSI. Is this a
capitulation?
Or a trap? Bitcoin's RSI has plunged to 33, a multi-year low. Yeah. Is this a textbook bear market bottom signal or another cunning bull trap?
Price can still drop while the RSI strengthens.
While you're talking,
right? It's called divergence, right? So when a momentum indicator like the RSI signals a very bearish trigger, hits a very bearish trigger, that puts a lot of people in a position where they're going to sell rallies. And so the price could still continue down while the RSI strengthens. So this isn't... is it the bottom? Could be, but my tendency would be to say no. More than likely, we're going to rally out of this and then we're going to go test those bottoms again. But I don't see this as, and guys, take this with a grain of salt because I'm a horrible trader, So everything I'm saying here is a bunch of BS. But I tend to feel like this is not going to be your normal bear market. And the reason I say that is because I think it's going to be based on how fast is liquidity reinjected into the system. Like, you remember COVID, how fast liquidity hit the system and how we were all like, whoa, like we're in a bull market now when the world shut down. It like that showed you that liquidity can change asset prices very, very quickly. And so when I look out into 2026 and I see how much debt has to be refinanced, I see the conflicts and wars that are building. Liquidity is going to be it's going to be necessary for the Trump administration to make it through the midterms.
Yeah.
So I think, like, if you could tell me how fast the liquidity was coming, then I would be like able to tell you when I think the bear market's going to be over. But I don't see it being like a normal 4-year cycle bear market.
No, I don't really believe in cycles.
Yeah.
I think it's been correlation. But I don't think we're in a bear market, actually. I mean, I think as much as we've been in a bear market, I don't think that this is the beginning of a longer sort of crypto freeze here. But Ben Workman wrote, long leverage gets flushed from the Binance exploit. Bitcoin is a 30% drawdown. MSTR FUD amplifies. Banks start marketing structured Bitcoin notes. Vanguard opens Bitcoin ETF access. QTNs. Now, I don't know if you believe in coincidence or not, but wow, what timing TradeFi has.
Yeah.
I mean, on the day Vanguard opened up sort of the ETFs, 8% up.
Right.
This is after sort of the JP Morgan attack, the S&P attack on Tether, on MSTR, on and on. So,
yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
The Texas Bitcoin Reserve purchase. Texas made its first allocation from the new Texas Bitcoin Reserve, spending $5 million on BlackRock's IBIT.
So, I mean, it's just Bitcoin price exposure.
Yeah,
it's not.
Right, I know.
There's no sovereignty here for Texas in this.
It's a start.
I mean, I don't know how a state would hold Bitcoin in a sovereign manner, but this is not.
How fast will these states turn if somebody's Bitcoin reserve gets confiscated through IBIT?
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. Like, well, how hard is it for? I can't think. They're just so afraid of self-custody, or maybe they don't administratively have to change a bunch of their documentation around their governance. And if they buy IBIT versus if they buy a commodity, they have to self-custody. Maybe that has more to do with it. But, you know, it's a start. And it's better than nothing. And I'm glad to see that they're pushing in that direction.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it, but it's probably a net positive, but it's not real Bitcoin.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, Bitcoin ETFs break out of outflow spiral. Mm. After hemorrhaging over $4.3 billion in 4 weeks, U.S. spot Bitcoin ETFs saw their first net positive inflows since October. Mm-hmm. Is December going to be green? Well, what's your guess?
December, I'm going to give it 60% chance of being green.
All right. I'd go with 90% chance.
All right.
But I'm just a bull's
heart. We'll see where we go.
All right. I want to read another on the Bitcoin AI from Maryland Hoddle here. In the end, Bitcoin has already won. It will be the tool that enables the rise of the sovereign individual. That battle is still years away, but it's coming. I could see it clearly now. Ultimately, governments will eventually become automated via blockchain and AI, reflecting for the first time the true will of the people. Bitcoin and AI are not separate stories. They are chapters of the same narrative. Their convergence is by design and was always inevitable. Bitcoin will reintroduce truth into the fabric of society, becoming the force function that drives a moral and ethical realignment. AI will serve as the productive and scientific miracle that demonetizes nearly all forms of monetary value. Together, they form a unified arc. Bitcoin as the anchor of truth, AI as the engine of abundance. Let fiat minds play fiat games. My message, stack sats into cold storage and heat up some popcorn because things are about to get very interesting.
Very interesting. I agree with everything there if AI is decentralized.
Do you think it will be?
I don't know. If it's not, I think AI becomes the Vatican Library of Knowledge.
What does that mean?
The Vatican Library has all these ancient books and ancient knowledge that nobody's ever been able to read. So it becomes this, like, we collect all the information, we know everything, and then we only unlock what we want you to know. And you could see that today, right? When if you know a lot about a specific topic and you talk to ChatGPT about that topic, you'll instantly realize that this thing is just pandering to me. And you have to keep going, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. This is this. And then they go, oh, yeah. And Chappie goes, oh, you were right. That's very intelligent of you, Cedric, to point that out to me. Like, so, like,
what do you think that it's you think just, that's designed like by a human to talk to humans a certain way, think, or it picked dude, that up?
It's designed because, I mean,
it's designed not to give you what either, you're looking for.
It's maybe, either but it to, can't discern the difference between a lie and truth, or it's built
because I've way. Seen that on Twitter where someone's like, no, Grok, that's wrong.
Yeah,
look at that picture no, again. Just, and it's like, thanks for pointing
talk
that
to
out.
It about anything that you're really knowledgeable yeah. about. But, you'll find out that it's dumb as a box of rocks until you point it out, and then it goes, oh, you're right. I thought a little bit more about that, and then it, but it panders to you. So if you're not smarter about the conversation that you're having with it, it's real easy to think that you're being told the truth, but you have to assume.
And I think the idea is most people are going to get dumbed down by it and not think for themselves right. and take it all as sort of like. Right.
Well, and if you can trap all the, if you can get people to rely on it and you can aggregate all valuable information that's truthful and only spit out what the end user is willing to accept. Yeah, that's fucked up. So if it's decentralized and really smart people are building specific agents around specific topics to make sure that it really knows the truth about a specific topic, and those agents get decentralized, and then those agents start communicating to each other, then truth will be spread and it'll be aligned with Bitcoin. But right now, I kind of see it like the Vatican Library.
Do you think these AI things are alive?
No.
No?
No, it's a large language model. It's not alive.
All right.
No. Nope.
Some people think.
Yeah, no. They're delusional.
All right. Do Sorry. You think, do you think like
or I'm delusional?
Do you think
that could be true?
Like a potential to be like the most negative force in sort of human existence?
No, I don't think that's the way the world works. When things get really negative, a good counter, like a good and powerful version arises that will offset it. It's I think that's just human nature, good and evil, black and white, yin and yang. It's like we need the threat of an AI overlord to do the right thing. Otherwise, we just kind of passively go, yeah, this is great, right? You need the threat of a failed financial system, like they couldn't get banking, their currencies, like it had to get so bad that they just rapidly adopt Bitcoin. Like that's the way humanity works. That's why I always say nothing gets fixed until it's broken. Because if you really view the way humanity reacts to things, it takes imminent threat to create action to offset
always,
it.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe we are going to have like, you know, we'll start with the AI overlord and all the oppression that that creates. And then people will steal the, you know, we'll open and open source it and start creating the alternative. Right. So I think in the end, it's a win, but it depends on where you're at in the cycle. Right.
Yeah.
But I don't see them. I don't see AI and Bitcoin. I think AI will use Bitcoin, but I don't see them aligned for truth. Bitcoin, definitely.
Nice. I hear you. All right. Well, cool. Francis, do we have any comments or questions?
Nothing tonight, boys.
All right. Sounds All good. All right, well, gents. If you guys are enjoying the show, hit like and subscribe. We'll see you every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. This is Bitcoin Center, brought to you by Byte Federal. Go bank yourself. You got the point of sale.
Hopefully, what? Like, the price of Bitcoin goes back up so we can get the RV back? Or...
No, we're staying in here.
All right.
We're going to do it up and stay in the swamp shed here.
The chicken coop.
The RV.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Peace.